Hey, welcome to the Morning Mic Check. I'm Pat Brown here with Mike Metzger. Mike and I have known each other for a while now. I first met him around 2010, and he's become one of the key mentors in my life. Over the years, we've had countless conversations, and in almost every one, I've walked away having discovered something new. Mike has this unique ability where he can reframe a conversation, and you begin to discover a deeper reality around you. It's a bit like Alice tumbling down the rabbit hole. I'm releasing these conversations as an invitation to follow me as I go down that rabbit hole. Well, good morning, Mike. Today, we're going to talk through Dominion work, kind of the cultural mandate. And look, so just a quick recap. The cultural mandate comes out of Genesis. It's before the fall. We say the four-chapter gospel doesn't start at the fall. It starts in creation. And in the garden, Adam was created to work. He was created to have dominion over the earth. So we just kind of, what's maybe a brief background for maybe anyone listening to this who missed a previous episode, but just briefly, the cultural mandate, where does that come from, and what's the connection between that and dominion?
Yes, we often refer to the creation / cultural mandate. The creation mandate is there in Genesis 1. Let us make them in our image. Let them be fruitful and multiply. So that's encoded in everyone's genes. And 7.5 billion people, obviously we do it without even thinking about it. The cultural mandate then is Adam and Eve, made in God's image, are placed in the garden to cultivate it, which literally means to improve it, make it better. And so it's a pure, it's a pristine garden, but it is not developed. And so the creation mandate is be fruitful, multiply, reflect, reproduce. So everybody on the planet reflects the image of God, whether they know it or not. The cultural mandate that goes hand in hand is because we're made in the image of God, we pick up where God left off and basically improve on the planet. So in our previous podcasts, I think we talked about, for example, if Adam and Eve stumbled upon a sugar beet and a cinnamon stalk and put the two together, I mean, God wasn't saying, don't do that. He was actually saying, mix, match, make it up, have fun, make it better. So the story starts in a garden, ends in a city. That's what we mean by the cultural mandate. Make cultures, and cultures are habits.
That's good. And where does dominion come into play? Dominion being, you know, the keys to the car, so to speak.
Yeah. Dominion's kind of an old-fashioned word. And so I think for a lot of us, we kind of get lost in that. Then we start heading into the bowels of this religious language, which often is so subterranean that we go, yeah, I get it. Yeah, we really don't get it. So some of the best help for me came from a three-day workshop went through with a friend of mine many years ago up in Boston. It's called the Burnham Rosen Group. You can Google it. You could actually attend one of theirs. So Burnham Rosen, B-U-R-N-H-A-M, Rosen Group. It's the work of two researchers at Harvard that began in the late 1980s. Now, what does that have to do with dominion? They have been studying the neuroscience behind high-performing leaders and organizations. And the first thing they discovered that's characteristic of high-performing leaders is they return authority or dominion. So let me hash out dominion or authority, be another word for it, in this way. There's two types of authority or dominion. Dominion simply means sort of I rule. Now, that has bad connotations. So I'm going to put it in the right connotation. The first type of dominion or authority we have is over what we would call inert objects. So I have, I have this my phone right here, and I have authority over or dominion over that phone in this regard. It asks for a password, and supposedly only I know the password. I and apparently a handful of Russians know the password for that. So we're the only ones that can get into that phone. And that phone doesn't have any dominion. So when I go out of our house, I'm carrying two keys. One key is to our house, and that supposedly gives us dominion over this house. If you don't have the key, you can't get in. And the house doesn't resist. It is an inert object, and the same with my car. I get in the car, push the button, but I have to have my key in the pocket. So that's one type of authority or dominion. And this is why it makes sense now that we hear Jesus saying, I'm giving you the keys to the kingdom. I am actually transferring over to you all authority, because all authority has been given to me. And I'm giving it to you like you had it originally in the garden. Now, that's all fine and dandy. There's a second type of dominion. And the second type of dominion is with not inert objects, but alive things. And I'm basically talking about people. In other words, Pat, there is dominion between two people, between you and I right now. And what that means is this. You never walk into any situation where you have 100% dominion over that other person. It's always somewhere between you two. And what I mean by that is, people are made in the image of God as intelligent and creative and responsible. Even after we fell, we have markings of that. And so when you sit down with someone to have a conversation, they could be pretending to listen, but in fact, they're not listening at all. The old joke is, like kids, when you tell your kids, sit down, what they really want to say is, I'm sitting down on the outside, but I'm standing up on the inside. And that's their way of saying, you don't have authority over me. Go ahead. Tell me to make my bed. Forget you. And so wise leaders, the first thing they do is they discern, how much authority do I have in this situation or in this conversation with my spouse, in this problem I'm trying to solve with a team? And the classic definition of frustration is dominion thwarted. That is, you have assumed you have far more authority in this situation than you actually have.
Yeah, I want to zoom out just a tad and talk through where does dominion fit in with work? And what comes to mind for me is simply we were put in the garden to work, and mm-hmm. sort of the direction of why we're working is to establish dominion over the earth. Is that right?
Yes. I mean, if you want to pull the lens all the way out to 35,000 feet or 35,000 light years, we are working to get dirt under our fingernails, just as our husband, our bridegroom, has dirt under his fingernails. He's looking for a bride who knows how to do what he did when he, Father, Son, Spirit, initially made cultures, Genesis 1, then turns it over to us. Otherwise, If the point of the gospel is get saved and go to heaven, you can't answer adequately these questions. Well, then why is there an earth? Mm. Why weren't we just made in heaven? I mean, why even run the risk of a fall? Second, once you are, quote, saved, why don't you just go straight to heaven?
Yeah.
And why the heck do I have to go through all this toil? And what's this all about? And so everything inside that shrunken gospel, work often becomes nothing more than a, quote, platform for evangelism, and which is actually a bait and switch. It's duplicitous. It's making everything instrumental rather than having any intrinsic value in and of itself. And so we work, and we have dominion in our work. Everybody has some level of authority. because this is the way the bride of Christ gets dirt under her fingernails and gets in touch with what is it like to be married to the maker. I have to make things.
Yeah. So what you're saying is a big part of living out your faith isn't only this try to get more spiritual. A big part of living out your faith is learning to work and to work well and exercising dominion, ordering things around you, creating order out of chaos in reflection of God's image in creation, how he created the world. Is that correct?
That's right. So I don't think you can really get any more spiritual than you are. You are a spiritual being with an eternity, with an eternal destiny in God's great universe. The key is more to discover the height and breadth and depth of this reality that you are fundamentally a spiritual being with an eternal destiny that Colossians tells us won't be revealed fully until your bridegroom comes. And then the real, the deepest Pat Brown will be uncovered. And that deepest Pat Brown is that Pat, you and I and every follower of Christ for all time are all mystically connected as his bride.
So part of discovering your faith is actually learning to exercise dominion.
That's right.
Yeah. And so now to kind of jump back through, you mentioned two things that stood out to me. One was dominion thwarted, and the other was learning to kind of understand dominion with another person. So let's start with the second one there. How do you know if you've established dominion with someone?
You ask questions.
Such as?
Well, let's say I worked next to you at the company where you work. It would begin by saying, well, what do you think might be a good approach here, Pat? We've just been handed this engineering problem. And then you have to almost have in your mind that flow chart of questions that every question ought to stir in your mind three more. So that you would say, yeah, so what do you think the issue is here? And you listen, and then you say, well, why do you think this has become a problem? When do you think this actually began to develop? Who are some of the players in this that either might have contributed or might be a solution? It's just having in your mind a warehouse that you can easily pull from, or I guess in today's language, an app that you can pull from that has these questions. Why, who, how, when, wherefore? There may be more. But there is some evidence, especially in the American educational system, that Americans are not very good at asking questions. There's an old joke that in the English university, the point is to ask the right question. In an American pragmatism, it's to find the right answer right away.
Yep, I get that.
And in finding the right answer right away, you can often be proposing, suggesting, or whatever. And the fact of the matter is, no one's listening to you because you haven't asked any questions.
Yeah, I think it's important to mention it's kind of funny. When I first started hearing you talk about this, it made a lot of sense for me because I understood that my faith had an important place in the workplace. I had no idea what that place was at the time, but I knew there was some connection there. And when you started talking about dominion, I understood it to be this sense of authority, this influence with other people, to further gain authority in their lives, to maybe lead them to something, to do something. It still served a purpose for me. And I think I probably had mistaken that purpose, because it wasn't until I got married that I started to really understand dominion and why we pursue dominion, and probably more so just how to pursue it, what those questions should be. It's almost like my original intent for asking questions was for the purpose of gaining dominion with someone to be able to actually exercise control.
That's it.
And that was good, but the end I think was missing in that. One thing I've learned being married is if I really want to understand my spouse, then I have to ask good questions that don't have an end necessarily in mind, other than the end of more deeply understanding my spouse. And so if my wife comes to me with a problem, I think the easy thing that I want to jump to is, like you said, let's talk through solutions. let's figure out an answer. Right. And if I do that early, too early, not only does it sort of ruin my chance for dominion, because I'm sort of trying to assert myself in a position that I don't have yet. I haven't earned that, but I'm also ignorantly jumping to a conclusion because I don't know all the facts and I don't know, well, this is maybe the situation, but what's going on in her head? How is she processing this? How is she feeling about this? And it is unwise for me in a marital context to jump to that. But I've also seen that over kind of play itself out in work, where I may think that I know the answer, but not only have I not established dominion, I also don't really know the answer because I haven't asked enough good questions to really deeply understand whether it be maybe the problem at work, or in this case, whether it be the person in front of me with my spouse. And that's critical when it comes to serving and loving others. And that's what marriage did for me, was really connected dominion. We're not talking like establishing dominion to dominate and to control. We're talking establishing dominion to serve and to love, because you can't serve and love fully until you really know deeply the other person and have established dominion. Does that sound accurate, Mike?
Absolutely. Nearby is a university, Old Dominion, and it's, you know, out of the understanding of Virginia that a self-governed people have to understand where they have dominion and where they don't. And so, for example, you don't take the law into your own hands. That's not your dominion. And so, yes, for Kathy and I, when we were first married, she might come and say X, Y, Z, and this is a problem. And you know how demeaning it is to say to someone, well, don't worry. I mean, so what you're doing is you're assuming control, dominion over their life. So you just assumed, you're worrying, stop. And I can remember, it wasn't too long into our marriage, our first speed bump was Kathy essentially saying, I wish you'd listen more and lecture less. And this idea of dominion is simply love. And love, anywhere you are, comes in if you're a loving person and assumes, I may have no dominion here. So A, why would I impose myself on this person? And B, that's a recipe for frustration. Now, please understand, saying you might have no dominion doesn't mean you're insecure. It actually means you're very secure, because you realize, I'm not God's solution for every problem in the world. So therefore, if I'm not the solution for every problem, when Jesus says, I've given you all authority, it doesn't mean you have all authority to solve every problem in your business. It is selective. It's probably very small. It's probably smaller than you imagine. And you're wise to ask questions like, when did you start to first notice this? Wow, how did that feel when it happened? Do you think other people are aware of this? What do you think are some of the roots of this problem? In fact, the high mark of love and dominion is when someone says to you, hey, Pat, that's a really good question. Do you know why that's important regarding dominion?
At that point, they've returned authority over to you.
That's right. They're giving you some. And so I literally view it like a scale of 1 to 100. It's a sliding bar. And this has been most helpful as we've coached or encouraged parents of teenagers, is because when that little baby comes out, you have 100% dominion. They immediately begin to take some when they cry at 3 a.m. So you're already no longer 100% dominion. And believe me, I'm talking to a new parent I know is thinking, oh my God, Mike, absolutely. Like, we have no control of our lives anymore. And they, you know, when they fling food and they throw up and they poop at the wrong time. But all that to say, let's just say you have 5 or 7% dominion. Here's what typically I think happens. I mean, you have, they have 5 to 7, you have like 95% dominion. I find that too many parents don't think anything about this until their kid hits a certain age, 13, 15, 17. Then they come to me and they're trying to essentially have dominion over their teen, and they don't realize they have 1%. So what's that teen doing? Rebelling. Why is he rebelling? Well, because the parent is, you're not going to use your iPad anymore. Give me that blankety blank phone. And you just don't have that kind of dominion. Now, see, again, where I think Christians get in trouble is they go, because I am the parent. The old joke is, if you have to run around the house telling everyone, I am the father here, it's obviously someone hasn't gotten the message.
Noted.
And so there is such a thing as positional authority. I get it. So there is positional authority, for example, in the church. But there is such a thing as cultural authority. And the church has lost, in many parts anyway, much of its cultural moral authority because of some of the scandalous behavior. And so it doesn't matter if it's Protestant or Catholic. If it's Catholic, we know those stories. If it's Protestant, but it doesn't matter. If you're at a Protestant church and your pastor has just resigned an affair, but you stand up and announce to Catonsville in Columbia, Maryland, but we represent the church and the church has dominion over this county. That's crazy. It's called cultural capital, social capital. All those things are what earn you dominion. Dominion has to be earned. It's exactly right at the end of Private Ryan. He has been saved. So now, earn it. Earn it. You want this salvation to be important? Earn it. Work out your salvation, is how Paul put it. Grace is opposed to it's not opposed in this way to effort. And effort is, there is a sense of earning it. It's not a works salvation, it's working out your salvation. And that requires dominion. So you are earning at your business, at the company where you work, cultural capital, so that people would say to you, hey, Pep, how do you think we might best solve this problem? If I was a clergyman, I just can't walk in and say, I represent Jesus. He's given me all authority over the earth. So I'm here at your business to help you solve this problem. Christians generally assume they have more dominion in most situations than they actually have.
So with that, I mean, dominion is something to be practiced and to learn, right?
And to be earned.
Yeah, yeah. So I think there's an element to learning how to gain dominion with someone, but there's also an element of learning how to practice dominion and I guess the word I'm looking for, the phrase is control what you can control. And that goes to the point you made earlier, which is all frustration is dominion thwarted. And so I found the first time you mentioned that, I started to mindfully observe that in all the times that I would get frustrated or I would see someone else frustrated. And I have yet to see a time where I couldn't point to that and go, they want dominion right now, or they are trying, or I am trying to control this thing or this person. and they are not doing that. And it is frustrating me. And we've talked about kind of that scale. You go from frustration all the way to violence. And so we can talk through that gap of dominion. But I think, how do we recognize areas in our lives that are the small things to actually practice having dominion or having authority over in a way to avoid frustration?
Yeah, that's a great question, Pat. The simplest way is that you can't think your way out of it. I think the better way is, we've already talked about this before, you do have, the easiest access you have for dominion is over your physical body. And so begin to practice the spiritual disciplines. So you have dominion to practice silence. Could be 15 minutes a day, could be 20, could be 30, but you have almost 100% dominion there. And it'd be easy to have 100% if it's I have to turn off my phone. I'm pretty sure you have dominion to do that. Solitude in the same way, fasting. So I think that where we get tripped up is, I guarantee you, if you practice silence, solitude, and fasting regularly, you will find your body becomes an ally in helping you learn to ask questions, but also walking into any situation and finding yourself going, well, first, Lord, show me how much dominion I have here. And he will show you if you simply ask questions. And I think it's a great scene in The Untouchables, way back many years ago, Kevin Costner and Sean Connery, and Sean Sam Malone, and Kevin Costner is Elliot Ness, and he wants to take down Al Capone and the Chicago Syndicate. But if you notice carefully in that scene, Google it, it's filmed in a church. And Sam Malone is the streetwise Chicago Irish cop or Scottish cop, whatever. But he looks at Ness and he goes, what are you prepared to do? Doesn't ask him what he wants to do. He says, what are you prepared to do? That's a brilliant question. In other words, you want to overcome frustration, prepare your body first. Prepare your body. You remember that they were trying to cast out, some Jesus disciples were trying to cast out demons. And he came to him and he said that essentially, the spirit can be willing, but your flesh is weak. This only comes out with prayer and fasting. In other words, you don't have a prepared body. So you're trying to exercise dominion over demons that you don't have. You got to build this up. This is muscle mass that you lack.
Well said. That's great. Yeah. It's almost like if you sense frustration in your life or a lot of frustration, that could very well be a red flag for trying to exercise dominion in areas that you just don't have it.
That's right. Because we have to remember, in creation, we are coded by God, even in our body, to have dominion, have all authority. Here's the garden. Even the authority we have is the authority to not do something. Some things are forbidden, even in the goodness of creation. See that tree over there, the knowledge of good and evil? Don't eat it. We have complete dominion. We gave up dominion. And so a smart person would view dominion like ripples, like a stone tossed into a pond, and watch those ripples come out in concentric circles, getting larger and larger. Your first thing would be, start with the closest ring, and the closest ring right around you is the space from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet, which in Jewish tradition, by the way, is considered to be the first heaven. And God inhabits that space, because in the Lord's Prayer, our Father who inhabits the heavens, plural. So he inhabits the space from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet. And he wants probably first to start in this first heaven and take dominion there, because you have it, but you have to exercise it. And that would be begin to practice these disciplines. And I will tell you from my wife and I, we had a conversation just the other night, and she was coming off a fast. And it was remarkable the things the Lord had said to her that she would probably say, you know, in the just the frenzy of everyday life, would probably never become aware of. So I think it's pretty much impossible. Well, I don't even think God designed the universe that what we do is we go for a walk in the woods and gaze at our navel, and he says wonderful things to us, and we, quote, figure everything out. I think it's far more that you train your body to be your ally, and your body begin to talk to you in ways like it will slow down your speech. Your ears will be quick to hear. Your mouth will become slow to speak. You'll ask a lot of questions. And when I began to practice this, I actually did discover I was in some settings, even some business settings, where I realized I have no dominion here. I mean, they're being nice, they're being polite, but I'm viewed as a lightweight. And if I'm a big boy, I will recognize I'm a lightweight in 99.9999999999% of the world. There's nobody in Nome, Alaska today that gives a flying flip what I think about things. If you can live with that, then you can say, well, I'm in Nome right now. I'm not important to what God's doing here. He has not elected me to have dominion here. Can I live with that? Is that okay? Can I just love these people? Can I just listen? By the way, I recently took a trip overseas to a city, and that was the attitude going in, because A, first, I'm a Westerner. B, I didn't know. I'd never been to this city before. And I sat through several days of meetings, and I waited until the facilitator finally, not finally, but toward the end said, you know, we haven't heard anything from Mike. Mike, what's your take on this meeting? And then later on at that same meeting, he said, would you tell us where perhaps you're not cutting it straight with us, where for example, you might see some things that you think these could be big problems. Now see, he's giving me dominion, but I didn't go in assuming that I knew squadoosh about anything going on here. I took notes. I listened. I asked questions. I asked more questions. I asked a lot of questions. It actually can be fun to sit down with your spouse or business meeting or any meeting and see how long you can go asking questions without making any sort of a declarative statement. Because a declarative statement is when we do play God. And playing God is not necessarily, that's the pejorative term for imaging God. God created by making declarative statements. We're made in the image of God. We are made to make declarative statements, but we darn well better declare what we know what we're talking about. And I find where we get in trouble is we make all sorts of declarative statements, nationally, internationally, and locally, that probably have no connection to reality or certainly to God's kingdom. It's because we didn't ask many questions. And I actually coach some people in the business world, and when they're coming into a certain situation, I just had this conversation this week with one, and I said to her, see if you can go through this entire meeting simply asking questions and taking notes, because I'm not sure how much dominion you have in your meeting this morning.
Any idea how that went?
Yes, I found out she stuck to the script, as we call it, and she found it was enlightening. Enlightening in the best sense of the word, Pat, as I'm sure you've experienced with Patty and myself with Kathy, is And Kathy shared some things with me last night. She connected some dots that I would have never been able to connect. And she was kind of sharing her soul. And I go, this is remarkable. Mike, be quiet. Be quick to hear. Slow to speak. Listen. Ask questions. By the way, there is nothing that denotes, well, I shouldn't say that's an overstatement. There is hardly anything that more denotes love to someone else than when you ask thoughtful questions. Thoughtful. Because the typical husband-wife thing is, how's your day? Fine. How's your day? Fine. Boy, that's enlightening. Illuminating. But it is a spiritual discipline to go, how's your day? Oh, went well. Oh, really? What went well? You will jar some people and go, huh? You said it went well. I'm curious. Tell me, what went well? I'm even happy for you. let me think. Well, this, we got this done. Oh, good. How'd that work out? I mean, how long have you been working on that situation? That's true. We've actually been trying to get this thing solved for 2 months. That's cool. What was kind of like the breakthrough to get there? You're going to find in that person, because I've heard this, people going, nobody's ever shown this level of interest. And even I didn't put some of these things together. This is a very helpful conversation, but they're not telling me anything. They're just asking me questions, but they're thoughtful questions. We love to talk about Leslie Newbigin. Some of you may or may not have heard of him, but he's got some outstanding books on the church and the Western church and the Enlightenment. But I just missed meeting Newbigin. He came to Washington, D.C., was with a small group of people at a restaurant. They just had a long lunch, and I couldn't make it in that day. And then he passed away, I think, about a year later. But it was remarkable that when I asked people that were at the lunch, what was it like? Several said, you know, now that we think about it, all he did was ask questions, but they were so stimulating. But he never tried to teach us anything. He just asked questions. The Newbigin was returning authority or discerning where his authority lie, because he had never met this group of college students. He had no idea what their issues were. I don't care if you had the Bible memorized. You don't know. If you come into a meeting as an agnostic, an agnostic is not stupid. They're actually very shrewd. And you ask questions. And you ask questions because you have an insatiable curiosity about people. And that's why I do poke some people on the side a bit. Our addiction to technologies are ruinous for curiosity. And that's been demonstrated over and over, that you don't get a curious people when you are on communication technologies for hours at a time. You just become uncurious. Everything is spoon-fed to you by Google and Wikipedia. And while that has benefits, that kind of access, I see it more often than not when we go to the beach. And to see kids on the beach with mobile devices and so quickly bored versus, man, I grew up going to the beach and it's just make up one game after another. I mean, how many games can you make up? We've created not only, you know, Fox and the Hounds, which we didn't create, but play that, or we create little golf courses on the beach and roll the ball and try to get it in the hole, and the sandcastle, and there's about 20 different things you can do in waves. But you have to be, that's a trained body that gets out there and goes, I'm not bored, I'm not itching, I got to do something. It's like, this is a fascinating world. In fact, you know, we could create a game right over here on this little sand dune. Let's go over and play that thing. And your kids and grandkids will love you for it. versus hey, can we go back and watch TV?
Yeah, in so many ways, technology can, to your point, be a great end and fuel to curiosity, but the entertainment factor that we get out of it, I think, just really can ruin that, take away from it.
I think that the entertainment factor is exactly right, Pat, because the French word we get our word entertain, to entertain a thought meant to hold it. But it also works the other way. Entertainment can hold your thoughts, and they can hold it to such a degree that you begin to become uncurious about the world around you. If even if it's walking through a neighborhood, now we live in a historic neighborhood, but you can walk through almost any neighborhood. We've done that before in Old Alexandria, just to look at the architecture, look at the architectural trends, look at the craftsmanship, look at, but we've taken friends over there and it's like, let's go find a coffee shop. You're walking by history, you're walking by where George Washington's family worshiped, and it's amazing how often people are just so uncurious. My daughter Jennifer and I, we before she got married, the weekend before, we took a road trip to Boston, and we took part of it was the Freedom Trail, and she noticed in the church architecture how the Enlightenment changed the arrangement of churches. That's pretty shrewd. But you'd have to have a curious mind to do more than just walk in and go, oh wow, this is cool. Next, oh wow, that's cool. Next. So it's dominion, and dominion, if you can discern at your work and almost everywhere you go how much dominion you have, I think first you're going to discover, in general, we have more, we have less than we imagine. Because dominion is earned more often than not between people, not with your car, not with inanimate objects, but with animate objects, people, business, work. And if you can get to the point where you begin to discover probably where you realistically have dominion, you can get pretty happy about that. You can go, I wonder how I got to have so little dominion here. Maybe I got a big mouth. Maybe I'm pushy. Maybe I'm arrogant. Lord, change me. I want to have dominion here. Maybe I shouldn't have dominion here. Maybe you're not calling me to have dominion here. Maybe you're calling me to work somewhere else. Maybe, 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 maybe. See, all those maybes should make you an agnostic. So you don't live a life of frustration. Life's just way too short for that. So for especially parents of once the kids hit a certain age, and I think that age is dropping down. I mean, technology and everything else that's going to hit, you're going to be the most effective, loving parent if you first discern how much dominion do you actually have with your kids. I've been in situations where the parent has about, really does have, they're down to about 1%. So if you try to exercise two, three, four, five, six, because, quote, that's God's plan, you're going to watch something hit the fan in your face. And it ain't going to be pretty.